Welcome back to another broadcast of the Word for Life radio program. With me in the studio is the co-host of the broadcast, Chancellor of Northland International University, Dr. Les Olala. And Doc, here we are in the studio, and it's hard to believe that we're already at that time of the year where we have snow and Christmas lights are out, and that whole Christmas spirit is in the air.
Well, especially exciting when we consider what Christmas is. I mean, I enjoy the snow. We're getting about a foot of snow today, actually, as we are broadcasting. I love the winters with snow. I love the whole idea of Christmas, even though I was raised in a family that celebrated Christmas but did not have a focus on what Christmas was really about in the person of Christ. But yet when we look at our topic for these next three broadcasts on the person of Christ, what was true in that first Christmas? What was it really like?
You know, we have traditions in each of our families, and I know you and Charlene have traditions in your family, and traditions take us back to roots. They take us back to origins. They take us back to beginnings. And as we think about what we celebrate, you know, the reason for Christmas and the season that we really observe the birth of the Lord, you know, it is helpful to go all the way back to the roots of what this first season might have been like when the Lord actually was born. And so I know that you've got some thoughts about that, and I know we're going to be looking at two passages of Scripture, and so if you're listening to the broadcast today, you may want to take your Bible and be thinking in Matthew and in Luke. We're going to be looking at the accounts there. But, Doc, what would it have been like in those early days when we go back to the roots of the season?
In my mind, I used to picture Christmas as being a wonderful time when everyone was in unison regarding the coming of the Christ child. I used to think of the quiet, the peacefulness of that Bethlehem scene and that glittering star, and think what we have done today is so confusing. But then when I look back, what was it really like? Things are no different today than when they were when Christ was born. And that's why I want to look at three groups, three gifts, and three words. These will be the themes of this Christmas series. Mm-hmm. And the three groups were the same then as they are now.
Right. Right. And that was, I was going to ask that, because Paul, when he wrote about the Lord's life, said that he came in the fullness of time, that God had waited until the world and its history had reached a particular point that he had been orchestrating. And so the three groups that you're talking about are coming out of a context that reflect not just what was going on in their day, but really what was going on when God saw the need to send his son. And that need hasn't changed.
Yeah, the timing was perfect. When the fullness of time was come, God sent forth his son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law. And Daniel prophesied to the day of his coming. And we saw the prophecy of Isaiah, how he would come. He would be born of a virgin. And then we find the place of Bethlehem would be the place of his birth. So
yeah,
everything was there in Micah. And now the time has come. The Christ child has come. All of the details, even Joseph and Mary coming down to Bethlehem from Nazareth during this time of taxation. But we see three groups involved in this, and it's very close to what we're looking at today.
Yeah, I think God had been working and working, and it's kind of interesting to think of it that way. God working all of this out, and you got three groups that are just kind of going through their life, going about their business, without really giving a lot of thought to the bigger thing maybe God was trying to do.
Yes. Why don't you read Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 10, and that'll give a context of our discussion.
Yeah, because in this broadcast, we're talking about the three groups.
Yes.
All right, here's what the Lord said in Matthew chapter 2. Now, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him." When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded them where Christ should be born. And they said unto him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet, And thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, art not the least among the princes of Judah, for out of these shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel. Then Herod, when he had privily called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, Go and search diligently for the young child, and when you have found him, bring me word again that I may come and worship him also. And when they heard the king, they departed. And lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. And when they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy.
Okay, so who are the three groups that we see in this picture? First of all, we see Herod representing the political structure. Now, what was the political view about the person of Christ?
Well, that he would come and be a king. He would come and rule. In fact, I think it's right there in the text we just read that he would come and govern his people.
Okay, now why would that have been a threat to Herod?
Well, Herod had clawed his way up to the throne and had done everything he could to keep that power. And I know the people weren't real happy with him, and he tried to buy them with all the buildings that he had done. I mean, he was a guy that had really found the throne, bought the throne, and now he was fighting to keep the throne.
So in other words, the opinion of the political power of that day was an abhorrence of Christ. They abhorred him.
He would have been a threat to them.
He was a threat to their rule.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were to make a parallel of what we're facing in just in the United States of America today.
Wow.
What is the view of Christ? I mean, we're talking about the first Christmas, and the political establishment abhorred the thought of this Christ child because it was a threat to their rule.
Mm-hmm. And well, you see it on every level politically today. National, state, civil, city, I mean, you see it at every level.
Okay, let's take it from a city level. What arguments are going on as we speak regarding the display of anything that is Christ-related?
Yeah, it's intolerated. It's intolerant.
Yeah, how can you eliminate the Christ child when you're talking about Christmas, the birth of the Christ child, and not have a manger scene because the political establishment abhors the thought of this Christ child? Why is Christ such an issue?
Because he's a threat, like you said.
Okay, what kind of a threat?
He's a threat to the heart and life of anybody who's in power.
Okay, so in other words, my right to rule, my life, is threatened by Christ. And so when you remember when Christ was crucified, what did they cry? We will not have this man to rule over us. Innocence was going to the cross. Guilt was being set free because of the hatred of the Christ child,
right,
who has now lived that sinless life and has come to the point of crucifixion. And the same thing at the end of his life here before crucifixion that came at the day of his birth, we will not have this man to rule over us. And Herod was threatened by that to such a point that he established the killing of these children.
Do you think the recent decisions that have been made at the national level, for example, the day of prayer issue being negated, I mean, do you think those are examples of what we're talking about?
Oh, absolutely. Why would you not sign a day of prayer? Why would you not participate in a day of prayer that has always been the history of our nation, always been the history of the heritage? It's been built right into the foundation, and there is a very clear move to get rid of that.
In other words, this is what Herod was doing, even though we don't typically think of that comparison. This is, in essence, what Herod, he wanted to get rid of Christ.
Right, because he was a threat to their rule. A threat to his rule. Why would there be such a threat today? I mean, why would an atheist be so upset that a person believes in God? An atheist does not believe God. He hates the God he knows that exists.
Yes.
Otherwise, if I were a true atheist, I said there is no God, I would pity you. I would not be so angry. I would like to see you removed.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the very fact that there is such rancor and such hatred indicates the fact that that claimed atheist knows God exists, but he hates the God who exists.
Yeah, see, I get what you're saying because I don't hate somebody who believes a fairy tale.
No.
I feel sorry for that person.
Right.
But I don't hate that person.
Right.
So if I'm an atheist and I really don't believe God exists, I shouldn't hate the people that believe him. I should feel sorry for them.
Yeah, just pity. I mean, you know, poor
right.
souls. You know,
that's a great
observation. You know, one of these days they're going to wake up. But the very fact that there's such a hatred. And how was Herod's hatred manifested?
Well, it was manifested in some ways deceitfully. It was manifested as though he really were concerned to worship, but underlying his hatred was ultimately expressed in murder.
Yeah, I mean, mass murder. I mean, look at how many innocent children were slain in that context. Well, that's the politicians. That's Herod, the politicians. What about the chief priests and the scribes?
Well, I think they were aware of all of the things that the prophets had said, but you know, they certainly didn't seem real motivated to get up and go with these wise men.
So the ones who knew the truth, in other words, they knew history, they knew prophecy. The Magi came along and said, where is he that is born the King of the Jews? And they very academically say, oh, go a little further south. That's supposed to happen down there in Bethlehem.
Micah.
They had an academic knowledge, but had an inner heart that had absolutely no interest.
Mm-hmm.
And how many pulpits across America have men in those pulpits who do not believe in the deity of the Christ child.
Mm-hmm.
They simply make it fairy tale, they make it something
mm-hmm.
else.
Mm-hmm.
And so while Herod abhorred, these people ignored.
And I think that's incredible because, you know, even in our day and age, you have churches that would argue for a virgin birth and they would argue for these things. And they'll even preach a Christmas sermon on Christmas Day. Or on the Sundays around Christmas, but they're not at all living for Christ. They're not at all involved in the cause that Christ came for.
They're knowledgeable of content,
mm-hmm.
but not of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And even if perhaps they are born again, their entire lifestyle has become back mm-hmm. in a mindset that is a complete world philosophy mm-hmm. mindset. Because of the influence of the world. So you have the political leaders abhorred. You had the scribes and the Pharisees, the religious leader ignored. What did the Magi do?
Well, they worshiped.
They worshiped.
They adored.
They came and adored him.
You know, you have a world that's thinking about Christmas, and they're either ignorant or indifferent, or they're interested. And as you talked about wise men really do seek him. And I hope that that's been really the thrust of the broadcast in your heart today. And I hope that you're in the right group. I hope that you're a person who's interested in the Lord and who's falling down before him to adore him. I hope you'll join us for the rest of our Christmas series as we continue discussing the Christ of Christmas. Until the next time that we're together, may the Lord bless you.